Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Before the break, we heard about an exhibit on Now at the Charles Ellis Art Museum on the history and art of burlesque. And it is hard to talk about burlesque without bringing up the name Gypsy Rose Lee. Gypsy's story, of course, was made famous by the stage and movie musical about her and her overbearing stage mother. But the real story of Gypsy, well, the real story is often hard to separate from the myth. But writer Karen Abbott tried her best. Abbott's 2011 book is called American Rose, A Nation Laid Bare. It chronicles the life and times of Gypsy Rose Lee from her youngest days in Seattle through her time in vaudeville and, most notably, her striptease work in burlesque. We spoke with Karen Abbott shortly after the book came out. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Mitch.
Most of us around today are not old enough to have actually seen Gypsy Rose Lee perform. So can you paint a picture of what her version of burlesque looked and felt like during her heyday? What made it distinctive?
Well, it's a good question. And I think what Gypsy did to capture America's imagination, you know, she really understood the idea of making performance out of desire 50 years before Madonna did, and the idea that we're always going to want most what we'll never have. So all of these other strippers would take off every stitch of clothing and put themselves right up in front of the audience and bump and grind and let it all out there and literally offer themselves up. And meanwhile, Gypsy would sort of swan across the stage and back up against the velvet curtain and stand tall and regal and unobtainable and tease the crowd and say, "Oh, no, I couldn't take that off, boys. I'll catch cold." And just sort of wink at them. She was a sophisticated self-satirist with a contagious delight in the comedy of sex. And people really responded to that.
There was this running dialogue that went along as she was doing this.
Yeah, she had patter with the audience, and she would often interact with the audience, and she would take something off and people would scream that she had told the scream ahead of time. She had a camaraderie with them, and she made fun of herself. And I think she knew that if she first laughed at herself, nobody else would laugh at her. And she would had this one routine called The Psychology of a Stripteaser. It was one of her most famous routines with a Freudian, you know, a nod to Freud there. And she would make fun of herself by saying, you know, "Look at all of the rigorous mental education I had to go through in order to take my clothes off. I began studying in Moscow at the age of 3. And so it was something that nobody else was doing at that time, and nobody has really done since.
This is striptease with the emphasis on tease as opposed to strip.
Exactly. And she patented something called the inside-out strip, where she would actually end up with the same amount of clothing at the end of the routine as she began. And she would just wear this really sort of ridiculous Victorian gown and start taking off her under things. Her garter might come off, a glove would come off, maybe her bra would come off. But yet she's still wearing this billowing Victorian gown and this, you know, a big bubble skirt with crinoline. And people took quite a delight in that, too, that they weren't seeing what they wanted to see. And so, therefore, they wanted to see more.
What made you want to write this book? You are obviously also not old enough to have seen Gypsy Rose Lee herself.
I wish I had been, though.
Well, so what first piqued your interest?
Well, my grandmother, who was just born a few years after Gypsy, you know, she always told me stories about growing up during the Great Depression. And she once relayed a tale about a cousin who claims to have seen Gypsy Rose Lee perform in 1935. Now, the cousin said that Gypsy took a full 15 minutes to peel off a single glove and that she was so damn good at it, he gladly would have given her 15 more. So that got me thinking, you know, who was Gypsy Rose Lee? Who could possibly take the simple act of peeling off a glove and make it so riveting that one might be compelled to watch it for a half hour? So I spent 3 years researching that answer and just became fascinated, especially because her real story really has not much to do with the version presented on Broadway or in her memoir.
Well, and that's a great point, because one of the threads that runs through this book is the concerted effort that everyone had in not just spinning their story, but really in writing their own story, in many cases just making it up. This had to be kind of a challenge as a historical writer.
Well, it was great fun. I mean, no other book, including Gypsy's own memoir, uses the materials in her archives. You know, she has 80 boxes of archives at the New York Public Library with countless pages of correspondence from her and her mother. Of course, her mother is one of the most memorable characters. And of course, she's also presented as this plucky, slightly eccentric woman who was a hustler, but basically was just, you know, a little strange, but not too crazy. Well, the real story is that Rose was, you know, a much, much more character that is almost could not be believed. And just sort of reading these letters and getting a real peek into this woman's psyche was just fascinating to me.
Well, let's talk about her mom because, yeah, I mean, as you say, we sort of think of her as the prototypical stage mother. She's pushy, and in the end, she, you know, gets what she wants for her daughter. But, I mean, really, she was more than what you would call pushy. What was driving her? And I imagine, you know, some of it must have been mental illness.
You know, I was the last person to talk to Gypsy's sister, the actress June Havoc, before she passed. And June did mention, you know, she said if Mother were alive today, they would be able to fix her. And so, of course, this was a different time and place. And here's a woman who, you know, fed her daughters on $1 per day, never took them to the dentist, never took them to a doctor, tried to turn her daughters successfully against each other, literally seduced men and women alike in equal numbers, and killed. I mean, she actually killed people to get her daughters on stage, which, of course, is something else that's not on the Broadway production.
And in the early days, I mean, the whole subterfuge kind of started from the beginning with name changes and ambiguous birth dates. I mean, Gypsy Rose Lee, we know, was not her birth name, but neither was the name that she was known by before that.
Yeah, I got a copy of the birth certificate, and I was able to get the original. And her mother, of course, took the original, made many copies, but the original was the original. And she would change her daughter's ages on there, you know, one age for train travel, another age to avoid child welfare authorities, another age to get a discount in a hotel. So they were all over the place. But one of the most poignant themes to me was this question of identity and the story that she possibly named Gypsy Ellen June. And then once June Havoc, the little sister, came along, she gave that name to June instead. And changed Gypsy's name to Rose Louise, and Louise for short. I think that was even just a subliminal part of the connection Gypsy always had with her mother. They shared a name, and she had this very strange relationship with her mother and love-hate emotional whiplash throughout their entire lives that I think was very damaging to Gypsy in the long run.
Damaging to Gypsy, also damaging to June. I mean, given the nature of the relationship between the three of them, why did the two sisters continue to come back to Rose?
No, it's a very good question. Rose conditioned them from a very young age to not trust anyone but her. Don't trust men especially. Don't trust each other. Everybody is out to get them except for their mother. So even though she was completely abusive to them, and there was actually one incident too where she would protect them. There's one incident in the book where they're in a hotel room, and in order to save money, she often shoved all of the entire act into one room. And in the musical, a hotel manager threatens to evict them because they're overcrowding the room, and Rose cries rape to get rid of the hotel manager. Well, in the book, the story is that she pushed the hotel manager fatally out the window, and Gypsy, you know, witnessed this. From then on, Gypsy had something on her mother, and later on, when Gypsy was doing seedier things in burlesque, Rose always threatened to blackmail her for every dark and secret thing she did before making it big. But I have a line in the book that sort of perfectly sums up the relationship the best I could understand it. It says, "There's a primal connection that Gypsy is incapable of severing, parallel to love and just as deep, but rotten at its root. It is a swooning funhouse version of love, love concerned with appearances rather than intent, love both deprived and depraved, love that has to glimpse its distorted reflection in the mirror in order to exist at all." So, you know, they had this emotional whiplash their entire lives. And Rose, for years and years, just threatened to blackmail Gypsy. And it was something that Gypsy was terrified of constantly, the idea that the past was going to come back and reclaim her and ruin this creation that she made, this Gypsy Rose Lee persona.
We'll talk about what happened that basically threw the switch and turned Louise into Gypsy, turned her from a performer into a stripteaser. And, I mean, there was really a moment where she realized this is what she was going to do.
Yeah, well, they were on the vaudeville circuit after June left the vaudeville circuit, and vaudeville was dying, and that was a function of not only talking movies, which started to become popular in 1927 with Al Jolson and the Jazz Singer, but the Great Depression. And once the stock market crashed, people were not in the mood for the sunny, mindless vaudeville anymore, and they wanted burlesque. They wanted sex. They wanted an escape that was sort of dark and a place where, you know, the audience and the girls were equally naked and equally vulnerable, and that sort of made that connection. In Gypsy, there's a year she never talks about in her memoir. She does talk about it in very light terms. And it's between vaudeville and between her discovery at Binsky's in New York City when she became big. And she spent this year, you know, her son even says it's a year she didn't like to talk about. And she was starving and they were poor and she was eating dog food. And her son said that she likely resorted to prostitution. She was forced to do things against her will. And it was at that point where Gypsy just said, "I'm going to take charge of things." You know, in the movie and in the play and in her memoir, her mother forces her into stripteasing. But that's not true. You know, June Havoc told me that she was the one that took control. When she saw the moment, she seized it, and she became left Rose Louise Hovick behind for good and became Gypsy Rose Lee.
Not to play amateur psychologist again, but it almost seems like this could be some level way of dealing with reality, you know. post-traumatic stress disorder or something.
Yeah, no, I think that there's something to that. And Gypsy loved her creation. She loved that it gave her money, security, it gave her fame, it gave her these things that she had craved since she was a little girl. You know, she wasn't this sort of plucky kid who fluked into success, hustled by her mother. This was somebody who at a very young age, you know, knew she wanted to be rich and she knew she wanted to be famous. And June tells me she used to doodle the word money over and over again in her notebook. And once she became Gypsy Rose Lee, though, she also had limitations. This creation presented limitations, and she was very frustrated by them. You know, she goes out to Hollywood in the 1930s wanting to be a big film actress and is expected to be a big film actress. But nobody wanted to see her play a character other than Gypsy Rose Lee. They wanted to see Gypsy Rose Lee. And, you know, she would give an interview about her book coming out or something high-minded that she wanted to discuss because she was the intellectual stripteaser. And afterward, you know, like, you know, people wanted to leave her. They wanted her to take her glove off. And June told me that that really upset her, that after an interview like that where she just had to become Gypsy Rose Lee again, she would go back to her dressing room and just cry.
So do you think, was she an iconoclast or did she aspire to be an iconoclast?
I think that she was. You know, I think that she was somebody, you know, here is somebody who was equally beloved by highbrow and low, you know, gangsters, politicians, New York's literati, you know, even Eleanor Roosevelt. Who else but Gypsy Rose Lee would receive a telegram from the First Lady that read, "May your bare ass always be shining." That was one of my favorite pieces of correspondence I read.
As you mentioned, you were the last person to interview Gypsy's sister, June Havoc, right at the end of a very long life. And you would think, given the passage of time and that her mother and sister were long gone, things might have mellowed in her mind, but that, I don't get the sense that they had.
Well, I think I asked June about that, and she, you know, was quite candid with me. And she said she forgives, but she never forgot. And there was one thing in particular. It was right after Gypsy was discovered at Minsky's, and she was cavorting with some really shady underworld characters. In her memoir, she presents Waxy Gordon as this sort of avuncular benefactor who just, out of the goodness of his heart, was helping her meet people. But no, you know, June said that she was very involved in the underworld, and she was, quote, one of their pets, just like Sinatra. And June, at the time, too, was having a bit of rough road. She was in the marathon dance circuit, you know, and it was just sort of its own macabre burlesque. And so June was trying to break out of that and get back into legitimate theater. And she visits Gypsy one night, and Gypsy says, "I'll help you. Go to this place." And she sends June to one of the underworld parties where some very unsavory things are going on with unsavory people. And, you know, June is here how many years later on her deathbed, and she says, "If my sister loved me, she never would have sent me to that place."
There has always been a certain degree, in fact, a lot of mystique surrounding Gypsy Rose Lee. In the end, can you reduce a larger-than-life person to the sum of her parts?
Oh, that's a good question. I've always tried to find an analogy for her and say, who is this person and why 100 years later, you know, she just turned 100 years old. Why are people still interested in this person? Why is Broadway still bringing her story back? And she is, it's the quintessential Americana story. This is Horatio Alger meets Tim Burton. I think it's the strangest rags to witches saga you'll ever hear. But if I had a, you know, I said, if, my thought was that if Lady Gaga and Dorothy Parker had a secret love child, it would have been Gypsy Rose Lee. And so she just was this mix of things and appealed to all people in all walks of life. And I think that still endures.
Well, and I think that's an interesting point because, you know, we think of strip clubs today and they're really kind of on the fringes. What was it about the times that let burlesque be the stage that could catapult someone to that level of fame? I mean, is there an equivalent to that genre that exists today?
Well, I think vaudeville, if you want to go back to vaudeville, vaudeville was like the reality TV of the 1920s. Although people back in vaudeville actually had to work at being famous instead of just getting drunk and fighting and rolling around in hot tubs. But vaudeville was one of my most fascinating points of research, I think. And one of my favorite characters that Gypsy and June ran into on the vaudeville circuit was a man by the name of the Amazing Regurgitator. And he would, for his grand finale, his assistant set up a small metal castle on stage, and he would guzzle down a pint of kerosene followed by a gallon of water, and he would eject the kerosene in this sort of 6-foot arc and ignite the tiny castle in flames, and the crowd would ooh and ah, and once they, you know, had enough, he would eject the water and then extinguish the fire. And he was a huge hit. He was one of the biggest draws in vaudeville. And I think once vaudeville died, you know, with the crash of the stock market, and the country's mood changed, and burlesques perfectly fit the country's mood. You know, these unemployed men would start lining up in the morning to get into a burlesque show at night, and nobody could afford Broadway anymore. Nobody could afford theater anymore. And this was something that was available, and pretty girls were available at burlesque wages, and it was a great escape for people during that time.
I wonder if maybe vaudeville and burlesque still really exist today. It's just called YouTube.
That's a good point. It's YouTube and it's reality television. And of course, there is, you know, flourishing burlesque troupes across the country. People are still reviving the art form.
And to that end, you mentioned before we turned the microphone on that you attempted to recreate the Gypsy Rose Lee strip on your website. What was that like?
It was very embarrassing, and to tell you the truth, and much, much harder than it looks. And I was trying to spoof her famous routine, The Psychology of a Strip Teaser, and had a little bit of fun with that. But my God, I don't think it just proves the point further that nobody is Gypsy Rose Lee, especially in this age of manufactured celebrity. She's a completely unique and original character, and I was really lucky to learn about her.
Karen Abbott, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Karen Abbott spoke with us in 2011 about her book called American Rose, A Nation Laid Bare, The Life and Times of Gypsy Rose Lee, published by Random House.